Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor LeCain. We continue our treasure hunt for solutions, talking with people who create solutions to seemingly impossible problems. Today we're talking about the challenge, how do companies treat employees well and still make money? For many years, companies have seen workers as an expense to be cut as much as possible, rather than as an asset that can help the company be profitable. This has led many people to being unemployed, and those who have jobs feeling mistreated, underpaid, and overworked, and it's led to companies not making as much profit as they can. This has been particularly true in the retail sector. But it does not have to be this way. A new book shows how companies that treat their workers well and strengthen operations can be highly profitable, and the book is creating quite a stir. It's called The Good Job Strategy, How the Smartest Companies Invest in Employees to Lower Costs and Boost Profits, written by Zeynep Ton, an adjunct professor in the Operations Management Group at MIT Sloan School of Management. Before MIT Sloan, she spent 7 years on the faculty at Harvard Business School. Zeynep teaches MBA and executive education courses in operations management, supply chain management, service operations, sustainability, and operations strategy. She's received several awards for excellence in teaching both at Harvard Business School and MIT Sloan. Zeynep's research explores how organizations can design and manage their operations in a way that satisfies employees, customers, and investors simultaneously. Her earlier research focused on the critical role of store operations in retail supply chains. Zeynep's research has been published in managerial and scholarly journals, including Harvard Business Review and others. She also wrote several Harvard Business School cases. Her work has been featured widely in the media, including The Atlantic, The New Yorker, The Washington Post, Bloomberg TV, and MSNBC. Zeynep was named one of the world's 40 best business school professors under the age of 40 by Poets and Quants. She was also featured by CNN Money as one of the 8 young business school professors on the rise. Zeynep lives in Cambridge, Massachusetts, with her husband and 4 children. A native of Turkey, she came to the U.S. on a volleyball scholarship from the Pennsylvania State University. She received her bachelor's in industrial and manufacturing engineering from the Pennsylvania State University and her DBA from the Harvard Business School. Zeynep Ton, welcome to All Together Now.
Thank you for having me, Eleanor.
I love your book. And
thank you.
I think it's so important. And in your book, The Good Job Strategy, you make a compelling case that companies can treat their workers well and still make good money, and that, in fact, investing in workers actually helps increase profits. Can you briefly describe for our listeners the Good Job Strategy?
Yes, so the Good Job Strategy, you know, at a high level, is a strategy that firms can pursue that create great value for customers as well as investors while creating good jobs for employees. And it's a strategy that doesn't depend on charging customers more. So the good job strategy has really 2 big components. One of them is obviously offering good jobs, investing in employees. But the second component, which is as important as the first, if not even more important, is to make a set of very smart choices that leverage the investment in employees, that transform the investment in employees into high performance, that make sure that, you know, the employees that you invested in are as productive as they can be. They can add as much value as they can add to companies' profits. So the good job strategy is not just about paying employees more, but it's a combination of both paying employees, treating them well as making very smart choices that leverage that investment.
Fantastic. And can you give a live example, you know, if you're a worker in a company that's following this good job strategy, What does that experience look like from the worker's point of view?
So from the worker's perspective, having a good job means a lot of different things. First of all, if you are a full-time employee at one of the companies that offers good jobs, you can make a decent living. For example, I studied four different companies that offer good jobs, low prices, and perform really well at the same time. And let me give you, you know, an example from one of these companies, Quick Trip. If you start as an assistant manager, which is a starting level position at Quick Trip, you would be making around $35,000 to $40,000 a year. And if you and your spouse are having, you know, both having this job, you make a lot more than the median household income in the United States. So first is having a good job requires you to be able to put food on the table and make a decent living. So that's the first component. And the other component is to have predictable schedules so you can manage your life, because this is a huge issue in retail. Oftentimes companies that work for these employees that work for companies that offer bad jobs tend to have very unpredictable schedules that make it almost impossible for them to hold on to a second job. So the predictability of the schedules is important. But at the companies that I've studied, Eleanor, good jobs are beyond good wages and predictable schedules. They also mean that you have a job in which you can succeed. You know, think about how important it is for everyone to do their job well and find meaning and dignity in their work. So a lot of employees that I've interviewed in retail just didn't have the training, they didn't have the resources, they didn't even have time to be able to do a good job. But in my model retailers, the four model retailers that follow the good job strategy, employees are set up for success, and they find meaning and dignity in their work, and they have a lot of opportunities for growth in their organizations.
Exactly right. And, you know, I love this thing that you point out on workers need to have a predictable schedule. My daughter is just coming into the workforce, and she's got a second job in retail, and she'll drive an hour to get to the job. She'll show up for work. She gets paid $8.10 an hour, and then she's there for 2 hours. It's a slow day, and they send her home. So she drives an hour home. She's made just about $16, less the gas, and she couldn't say she would do another job because she had committed to being there for the full day. And it just strikes me as so unfair that companies can get away with that. And from what I'm hearing from you, that's not just an occasional occurrence. That's actually fairly widespread among retail workers.
You know, that happens all the time, Eleanor. And it's not because companies want to be mean with their people. That's because companies think that this is actually good business for them. And let me explain, and let me make the case for why it's not good for them. So the reason that companies often provide very unpredictable schedules and ask, you know, your daughter to, after 2 hours, to go home because there just aren't enough customers, is because they're trying to do their best to match the number of employees they have with the customer traffic into their stores. So you can imagine in a retail store or any service environment, you never really know how many customers will show up. So you don't know how much work there will be at any point in time. So if you haven't spent money on your employee training, if your employees can only do very specific tasks, sometimes you need them, sometimes you don't need them. And as a result, the result of all this is very unpredictable schedules for employees. But the model retailers that I've studied don't do this because they cross-train their employees. So when the customers are there, their employees can attend to the customers, help the customers. And when the customers are not there, they know how to perform a wide range of other tasks. They can manage the shelves. They can order inventory. They could do a whole wide range of tasks, which is good for them because they have multiple skills, which is good for them because they have very predictable schedules that doesn't depend as much on customer traffic, and it's great for the companies because companies know that their employees are always busy. So cross-training is one of the smart operational choices that I identify in my book that allow companies to leverage their investment in people and allow them to have good jobs.
I love your emphasis on the cross-training, and it makes so much sense to me. First of all, any training is good because we've all had experiences going into these retail stores going, hello, does anybody work here? And, you know, and people who are in the jobs, but they don't really know what they're doing. They don't know the merchandise. But then we finally find them.
I've heard of people in the interviews that I had with retail salespeople. They were hired right before Thanksgiving and thrown into the selling floor, mm-hmm. not knowing what to do, mm-hmm. and expecting to figure it out right on the spot when there are lots of customers around. So, yeah, any training is a good thing to begin with.
Exactly. And then your description of cross-training, it just makes so much sense. So, you know, we've all been to supermarkets. We've got a Safeway here in my neighborhood, and we go, you know, just to pick up some sugar or something we might need. But we now have to add an extra, you know, 20 minutes or more where we're going to be waiting in line to be served. And yet then when you're there, you're looking, and, you know, first of all, why don't they have more staff there? And second of all, you're looking at people who are there, but they're stocking the shelves and they're not able to be pulled into the cash registers when there's a flux of people wanting to be checked out at the cash register, precisely because the company has not invested in either having enough workers on site or having cross-training so the workers who are there can go to the task that's needed in that moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the observations that I made when I studied these model companies, again, the companies that pursue the good job strategy, they always try to make sure that they have enough employees on the selling floor. So most other retailers are on the side of having too few employees, but the companies that follow the good job strategy are on the side of having too many employees to make sure that the customer is always served, to make sure that everything that has to be done at the store is done at the store, to make sure that employees can participate in reducing costs by involving in process improvement. So it's a very different philosophy mentality about, you know, both how much training you put into employees and how many employees you will have on the selling floor. These are both two very important operational decisions that are different than what everybody else does, but that make a huge difference for the model retailers.
Yes, absolutely. Well, let's talk about that counterargument. And we've heard this ad nauseum from Wall Street and from the business world now for decades. And they just look at employees totally as a cost. So therefore, let's cut the labor as much as possible so we can cut our costs. And, you know, in a certain extent, yes, of course, labor is an expense. But there's a fundamental flaw in that argument. And you can see from your research that you can actually rely on employees to cut costs. So what do you say to people on Wall Street and people in the business world who say, well, clearly labor's an expense, let's cut the labor and cut our costs?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I tell them is to make sure they understand companies' operations before they judge them. Because oftentimes when they will look at labor and say it's just a cost, it means that they don't understand how stores work. They don't understand how retailers add value. And if they did, they would understand that labor is not just a cost. But it's a hard case to make. Let me just give you an example. In one of my papers, I found that I used, you know, years of data from a retailer, and I looked at hundreds of stores over time, and I found that their stores were consistently understaffed. In fact, I found that if they had more people on their selling floor, then they would make more money. So if you add more employees, your profits will increase. And it just didn't make any sense to me, right? How can it be that if, you know, stores don't have, you know, they have too few people when you know, it would improve their profits to have more? But then I presented this research to a group of retailers, and I said, if I gather data from your organization, how many of you think that I would have the same result? Almost all of them raised their hands. And here's the explanation. And one of my colleagues from Wharton School had a similar result from one of his studies, which looked at, again, hundreds of stores of a retailer. And here is why. Because the labor is seen as a cost, there's so much pressure to minimize that cost. And that pressure comes not just from Wall Street, but also from the CEOs into the store managers, because labor is something that they can measure, right? It's very easy to look at labor and say, this is how much you spent on your payroll. But it's very hard to say what that spending gets you. So it's very easy to measure, and as a result, in many retail chains, store managers are evaluated on how much they spend on payroll as a percentage of sales. And when performance evaluation is done that way, they have so much pressure to reduce payroll, especially when there is a decrease in sales. So it's a problem at the Wall Street level. It's a problem inside the firm level, but it's a philosophy problem, and it will be a hard time for us, you know, a long time for us to change people's minds, because it will require seeing something very differently.
Yes, yeah, so we're going to get back to that point about taking some time to change people's minds. But before that, I want to talk a little bit about, in your book, you profile four companies in depth that follow this strategy successful, and you reference many others, and, you know, Southwest Airlines, which is my favorite airline, you mentioned several times in there, but it's not one of the top four that you go in depth. But one of them you go in depth is one of my favorite stores to shop, and that's Costco. Now, Costco is clearly a great example of a company that's, you know, treating its employees well and still making a lot of money. Costco has 72 million members. You have to be a member to shop there.
Yep.
So 72 million members, and the last I saw, they had $103 billion in sales every year. So what is Costco doing right where they have so many loyal fans and they're making so much money?
I mean, Costco is giving the customers what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And Costco stores always have the right products in the right place at very low prices. Costco's employees are extremely efficient, and customers have a great experience there. But overall, what Costco does is exactly the same as what the three other model retailers do, which is they invest in their people. Their employees are very motivated, they are very capable, they are very competent, and at the same time, Costco makes a set of operational choices that make sure that their costs are low, their employees are productive, and that make sure that their employees are at the center of their success. Let me give you an example. You know, we talked about cross-training. You know, Costco cross-trains its employees. We talked about having enough people on the selling floor. But another choice that Costco makes is they offer less. Right, when you go to a Costco store, they don't give you shopping bags. It's bare cement on the floor, industrial lighting, no, you know, signs that tell you where things are. It's bare bones environment, and they offer fewer products than their competitors do. But offering less, especially in terms of offering fewer products and not changing the prices of products all the time, allows them to really reduce their costs and to make their employees as productive as possible. So it's a combination of, you know, great people and great operations that enables Costco to achieve excellence for their customers. And that's why, you know, the 70 million plus customers are very loyal ones, and you are one of them. I am one of them as well.
That's great. Yeah, I'm not a shopper. I don't love shopping. My daughter is the shopper in the family, but I love going to Costco. It's the one big exception. And part of it is knowing some of how they treat their workers, because it makes my skin crawl what Walmart is doing to people. And by the way, on the Walmart, they're paying their workers so low wages that millions of the people working for Walmart are actually receiving public assistance, whether food stamps or, you know, because they're below poverty wage. They're working full-time, but they're still below poverty level, so they rely on food stamps and other government programs to try to keep their family together. But
yes, and Eleanor, let me just say Walmart is not the exception.
Right.
Walmart is actually the norm, because the median wage for a salesperson is just about $10 an hour. The median wage for a cashier is just about $9 an hour. Even if a salesperson were to work, you know, 40 hours a week for 52 weeks, they would still be below the poverty threshold for a family of four. And even a full-time salesperson in a lot of organizations won't be able to work 40 hours a week, because retailers consider anyone who works more than 30 hours to be a full-timer. So,
right.
And even a full-timer will not have predictable schedules. So it's, the situation is quite bad for millions of people out there. And it's not just retail, it's other industries as well. And one thing is, and I hope, you know, there might be some listeners thinking that, well, but these are entry-level positions, these are kids who take on these jobs. But the median age of a retail worker is 38 years old. These are not kids anymore.
Wow. That's amazing. So that's what part of what makes me excited about shopping at Costco is I know that they treat their employees well. They pay them a decent wage. They give them training. They will promote from within. They do all the things right that you would want a company to do in terms of treating its workers. And they provide me as a consumer good value. And by the way, I love the lower choice. I never realized that was a conscious business strategy. But I'm someone, I walk in there, and if I see 152 kinds of toothpaste, I am totally confused. I have no idea what's the best quality, what's a good deal for my money. And I just, it just makes me so confused. I just want to walk away and go home.
But yeah, you are confused. You know, when there are so many choices, you are confused. Employees, imagine how hard their job is when
mm-hmm.
there are so many products that look just the same.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine how complex that operating environment is and how much inefficiency there is because of, you know, having 150 different toothpaste on the selling floor. But companies like Costco, you know, reduce that choice for us. They make smart decisions for us. They for the customers. And they make their employees and investors very happy with that choice as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's part of what I love about your good job strategy is it really works for everyone. And on that point for Costco, I know they're going to have one or two items to choose from and something that I need. But I know they've done their homework. They've tested the product. They make sure that it works. They make sure that they're getting good value for me, the shopper. I saw a great documentary on Costco. It was like a two-hour show describing how Costco works. The level of testing they do, yeah. and their Kirkland products, which is their own label, the toilet paper, they spent months checking what's going to feel soft, what's going to be absorbent, what's going to flush well, and they really will not put anything out there unless it's quality. And walking in the door, I know that. So it's not like walking into a Walmart or a Safeway or another store, and I don't know, you know, what's, you know, a cheap thing that's just been imported from China and full of germs and it's going to collapse next week, and what is real quality stuff. In fact, with Walmart, you almost know you're going to get poor quality because they have put such pressure on their vendors who supply the products to Walmart. They pressure them to keep the prices low, so they actually will sometimes have to make an inferior product than they usually did, like, you know, like the jeans. So when you're walking into Walmart, you think, even though you might have the right brand, the quality of product is probably lower because they've pushed the vendor to keep the price down so much.
Yeah, and Eleanor, you mentioned, you know, how as a customer you trust Costco. It's just the same with the other companies that I've studied that follow the good job strategy. Trader Joe's or Mercadona, these are two supermarkets that also offer a lot fewer products than their competitors do. A typical supermarket has about 40,000 different products. Trader Joe's has around 4,000, so a tenth of that. But when a customer goes there, they know to trust what Trader Joe's has chosen for them. Mm-hmm. Because just like Costco, they go through a very rigorous process of testing and figuring out what customers want. And it's the same thing with Mercadona as well. So in some ways, these companies become advocates for customers because they do the work for customers and they present them with the best products for value.
Right, exactly. So you're giving these fabulous examples. I mean, Costco, we're not talking a little company here. We're talking over $100 billion in sales every year with raving fans. I mean, people don't just shop there. They love shopping there, and they feel like they belong to the Costco community. And you see the positive impact in Costco, in Trader Joe's, and you just, you know, the list goes on and on. And we think that companies are doing everything they can to maximize profit. That's kind of the nature of capitalism. That's how a company works. It's made to make the profit. And yet you're showing us that really they're not doing everything they can to maximize profits. They could do a lot more by making these operations choices you describe and by treating the workers well. So it seems like your evidence is so compelling that this approach is good for the company profits and the brand. Why don't more companies follow this good job strategy?
Yes, you know, I guess you're absolutely right. There is so much compelling evidence that the good job strategy is just a much better strategy than what I call a bad job strategy, which is, you know, offer bad jobs, bad customer service. But the reality is that companies can still make money following the bad job strategy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are a lot of successful companies, you mentioned some of them, that offer bad jobs, that offer bad customer service. They're still in business. They're still growing, and they're still making money. Their employees have miserable lives. Their customers have very bad service, and they complain all the time. And their investors are not as well off as they could be because of all the problems that happen in the stores and all the lost sales opportunities because of the bad jobs and bad operations that they have. But they live in this mediocrity world, and they're okay living in that world. And I think part of the reason is because of the mindset that, you know, labor, you know, if you want to succeed, you have to pay your people as little as possible. You have to treat them just like it costs to be minimized. That's how you get to low prices. That's how you get to high profits. That's the mindset, and it's the wrong mindset. I think the other part is the good job strategy that I talk about in my book is a better strategy, but it's a harder strategy to execute. So I give this example about how, you know, firms can make bad choices just like, you know, people can make bad choices. Right? We know, for example, if we want to live a healthy, long life, that we should exercise regularly. Right? That's the thing to do. But regular exercise requires a long-term view. It requires commitment. It requires discipline. And it requires hard work. The good job strategy is a much better strategy, but it too requires a long-term view. It requires commitment. It requires hard work and a lot of discipline. And unfortunately, you know, excellence is a lot harder to achieve than mediocrity, and most companies are stuck in mediocrity. I just started teaching yesterday was the first day of my service operations course at MIT Sloan, and I told my students, I said, you know, I truly believe that service operations is ready for a revolution, and that will come from people like you. And that revolution is we're not going to be stuck in this bad jobs, bad customer service mentality. We're going to move on to good jobs, good service, still low prices, and great profits. And everyone will benefit from that. So I'm betting my money on my students, the future leaders, who will make much better decisions.
Wonderful. And we're going to come back after a break, and we're going to talk about how do we encourage that revolution away from mediocrity towards excellence in retail. We're going to pause now for a break. This is Eleanor LeCain speaking with my guest, Zeynep Ton, who is shaking up the business world by showing how companies can be more profitable by treating workers well and paying decent wages and being good on operations on All Together Now. Welcome back to All Together Now. This is Eleanor LeCain speaking with my guest, Zeynep Ton, the MIT professor who is shaking up the business world with her new book, The Good Job Strategy, discussing how companies can be more profitable by treating workers well and making smart operational decisions. Zeynep, just before the break, we were talking about your discussion with your students this week that you see a revolution coming in retail. Can you talk a little bit more about what you see coming that you would call a revolution in retail?
This is what I'm hoping will be coming, Eleanor. So yesterday was the first day of my class, and I told my students about a revolution that already happened in manufacturing. If you look at auto manufacturing, for example, when you look at how cars used to be made, there was a shift from craft, you know, manufacturing, where you would make cars for each person, but they were very expensive, and they were made for only wealthy individuals, to Henry Ford, which really revolutionized that industry by inventing the moving assembly line and by producing cars at a mass scale, which is like the retailers now operating in a mass scale. However, you know, if you studied Henry Ford, one of his sayings is, why do I need to hire a whole person when all I need is a pair of hands? So in the mass production, employees were seen as interchangeable parts, and all was needed was their hands. And the result of that we saw was poor quality and a lot of higher costs for the products that were produced by companies like Ford or GM compared to others like Toyota, which treated employees very differently. They treated employees like scientists who were generating and testing hypotheses on the assembly line every single day. So companies like Toyota showed us that if you invest in your people, and if you invest in your operations, if you combine this great people with great operations, then you can reduce your costs and improve your quality at the same time. And I think when I look at retail now, when I look at service industries now, I see just the same thing as people saw in 60s, 70s with mass production. Bad jobs, poor customer service, which is like poor quality. And I hope that the new generation is going to be the generation of companies that are like Toyota of the retail industry, which will combine great people with great operations.
Fantastic. Well, I look forward to that day because, you know, can you imagine how our general life satisfaction and our own productivity will go up when we don't have to stand in line for half an hour to buy a bag of sugar?
Absolutely. And it's not just in retail. You know, think about your encounters with people when you know, when your internet goes down and you call a call center, and think about how much time you waste there. Think about other settings where you experience bad service as a customer. These are all the results of either poor treatment of employees or poor attention to operations or a combination of both of them.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I'll often say to my husband when we're shopping and we've, you know, either spent a long time trying to hunt down a retail service employee to help us with a product choice, or we find someone or several and they have no idea what they're doing. And I just look at my husband and I go, people think education is expensive. People think training workers is expensive. But the cost of not educating, the cost of not training people is really high. And when we start getting more companies following this good job strategies where they're investing in the people, doing the training, doing the operation, you know, life is just going to be better for everybody.
Absolutely. It will be better for employees, better for customers, and better for investors.
Right. Yeah, and I, you know, when we talk about kind of what some of the costs are to the companies of the poor training and the poor operation, I was struck in your book when you described how heartbreaking it can be. I don't know whether it was Walmart you were talking about, but these companies, they invest a lot of money into figuring out what does the customer want to buy, designing the product, manufacturing the product, shipping it across wherever to get it to its destination. It gets unloaded into the store, and then it sits in the back storage room because, you know, the person who's supposed to be moving it from the storage area onto the shelf in the store is too busy to do it.
Yes, they're either too busy to do it or not motivated enough to do it, and it really is heartbreaking. You pointed to a very important issue, which is companies don't realize how much bad jobs are costing them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The example you gave, you know, they spend millions of dollars in their back-end supply chain only to have everything break down in the last 10 years of their supply chain. One of my favorite examples is they spend millions of dollars in their information technology systems, and apparently they can track everything so well with their data, but most of their data are actually inaccurate.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the supermarket executives we've talked to told us that every year they sell 25% more medium red tomatoes than they ever receive to their stores. Think about that. Every year they sell this. And why is that? Because for a checkout person who has been there just for 2 weeks, any type of tomato looks like a medium red tomato. And, of course, supermarkets have a bunch of different types of tomatoes. So the checkout person needs to memorize all the codes, and, of course, they get it wrong. And now you've spent millions of dollars in your systems, but the systems have the wrong data because you haven't trained your employees and because you haven't invested in them and because you just have way too many products. You have a lot of complexity. So it's just heartbreaking to see how things fall apart because companies haven't invested in their people.
Right, exactly. And I think that's really funny that they think they sell, their data is showing they're selling 20% more medium red tomatoes than they've ever stocked. So,
yes.
You know, right there, that would be a red tomato flag, as we might say. But, you know, we've got to be treating the workers better and listening to the workers and having the workers say, you know what, this is what I see customers interested in, or like their data is not going to show them, you know, I've had a lot of customers come in recently and they're asking for this book, The Good Job Strategy. I think we should stock it on the shelf. The data is not showing what people are asking for that they're not offering. It's just showing what they think they're selling of what they already have in stock.
Yes, so this is one of the other things that the companies that follow the good job strategy do so well. They empower their employees to make decisions for their customers. So if their employees realize that the good job strategy is selling, and their customers are asking for it, but it's not there so they can't buy it, then they have a mechanism to, you know, to communicate that information to the merchants so that merchants can stock that. But, of course, that requires them to be empowered, and that also requires them to have enough time to talk to the customer, understand what the customer wants, and time to communicate that information. And if you see employee as just as a cost to be minimized, and if you try to have as few people as possible, employees won't have time to do this.
Right, and also so many of the companies, they've got this command and control approach still, and it's all about corporate headquarters, and they're listening to the CEO or the top executives who have, you know, don't spend much time, if any, on the floor, and they're ignoring the workers who are out there who are really the workers, the frontline contact with the customer. The worker is the face of the company. It's the voice of the company. It's the personality of the company. It's the first and last point the customer is going to have with that company. And it's shocking to me that companies just are not listening to workers.
Yes, it's shocking, but you can see, Eleanor, how hard it might be if you have hundreds or thousands of stores and you have hundreds and thousands or tens of thousands of ideas coming to you. You have to have a process for managing that.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have thought about your employees as sources of that information and have a process to be able to get that information. And companies that follow the good job strategy, they do.
Right, right. Fantastic. So you're a professor at MIT. You've been a professor of business at Harvard. You're, I think, at the cutting edge of a change that needs to be made. What we've seen a lot, though, is that things that need to happen don't always happen, that the Walmarts of the world become the biggest company, you know, in the world with the biggest, most number of employees, most profits, you know, whatever the measure may be, that they're the Goliaths there. And so they can still chug along, as you say, still make money even though they're not following a process or approaches that would make them even more money and more happy customers. So how do we begin to change this mindset that you've mentioned, where business schools are still teaching in too many cases that labor is just a cost to be cut? So what do you think? Do we begin in the business schools, or how do we get this revolution going?
I think everybody has to do their part. It's not just going to be business schools changing their approach, but it's, you know, everybody, I think, can do their part. At business schools, certainly, in accounting classes, the first thing the students learn is that labor is a cost. And I'm not an accounting professor, but I think having a more sophisticated response to what the labor is would be a good place to start. But we do have to teach our students how to have a long-term mindset. And in addition to the tools that we teach them, tools that maximize profits, tools that make them, have them make better decisions, we need to teach our students how to use those tools in a way that satisfies multiple stakeholders: employees, the environment, the customers, so not just short-term profit maximization. So at the business school, we all need to do our part, and not just in, you know, operations courses or in ethics courses, but we need to do our part in every single course that we teach. I have a very deep belief in this. And unless, you know, unless there's a common voice coming from faculty, which, again, is not that easy to achieve, I think it will be hard to make a change. If part of the faculty believe in this and the other part doesn't, then it will be hard to change students' minds. So I think one is changing the minds of the faculty who educate future leaders. The other is we are all customers, right? Even if we're not business people, even if we're not investors, even if we are not business school professors, we're all customers. And we can vote with our feet. We can choose to shop at places or dine at places that offer good jobs. And guess what? We don't have to compromise price. There are places that offer as low prices and good jobs. So let's choose those places over others. Because when we care, then companies might start caring too. I mean, look at the organic revolution. When customers kept asking for organic food, retailers who competed on the basis of low cost started carrying organic food. So maybe something similar could happen for jobs. So I think we all need to do our part.
That sounds like a
revolution.
Yeah, that sounds like a great strategy. And what about for our listeners? I love you talking about, you know, voting with our feet, and we can choose to shop at places that give good jobs. It was actually one of my favorite parts of your book was reading about that you choose to shop at these places with the good job strategy. And part of it was your four children, and you wanted them to be in places where the people who are working in those stores are treated with dignity, and that's how the world should be. I think that's very moving. And so what can our listeners do to encourage companies to follow a good job strategy and treat their workers well?
You mean apart from shopping at them?
So that, well, how would you know, like if you're a customer, how would you know what is a company that's following a good job strategy?
Yeah, so, I mean, from the media, they might know some of the companies already, Costco, Wegmans, Container Store, Publix. These are all companies that are known to offer much better jobs than their competitors. Unfortunately, there is not a single place that one can go to look for companies that offer good jobs, and perhaps we could, you know, that could be a project for some academics to develop criteria and start listing companies that offer good jobs. They could look at places like Glassdoor, which has ratings from employees about how they feel about their jobs, to compare different firms.
What is that called? Where do you get those ratings?
So Glassdoor is a company that employees, they give information about what their wages are, and they provide information about how satisfied they are in their work environment. So it's not, you know, it's probably not the most rigorous place,
mm-hmm.
but it's better than not having any data.
Well, that's great. Well, it sounds like maybe we've come up with a project for one of your students. To do
and,
that,
you know,
and you could do a website.
And I think that's true. That's true. And I will. I have been asked this question. My book came out just 3 weeks ago, but several people have already asked me this question: how do I know if a company offers good jobs? That I might actually take on this project when I have some time, or have a student take on this project for me. So.
Thank you. I think that would be a really valuable service.
And sometimes you can also ask people who work there as well.
Right. Yeah, ask the workers. Although if they're in a bad jobs place, they might get fired.
Well, but sometimes you could tell from their look. Like you ask them a question, they won't want to answer because somebody is watching them.
Right.
And they're all uptight. That is an indicator that place does not follow the good job strategy.
Definitely. And I think that would be a great service if you would put that together, because I know what's happened. You mentioned the organic and the whole green company thing became very big. And then we had the problem of greenwashing, where companies claimed that they were environmentally sound and making good environmental choices, but actually they weren't. But with the greenwashing, they said the right thing, so it confused the customers. And how are we supposed to know what's real and what's just corporate blah blah? So, you know, someone like you who really has this in-depth business knowledge can just say, you know, this is what I know about these companies, and they're, and not all of them are going to be perfect, but I think you're right. You talk about a virtuous cycle, that these are the companies who got the whole package, that they treat the workers well, they listen to them, they pay them well, they have staffed enough, they do their operations well, all of that. And that they tend to have this whole virtuous cycle going. And if you could just let us know, these are the ones I know about. That's not to say, of course, there might be more you haven't heard of yet, but that would be a great service to we, the shoppers of the world.
Thank you. I will. I am certainly taking note.
Good. And what about consulting to companies? I mean, I could imagine, even if you're a small or middle, big size, whatever, companies finding about your book, The Good Job Strategy, and they say, gosh, you know, I thought I was doing the right thing by minimizing labor costs, and now I'm seeing that's not the whole picture, that labor can actually be an asset that if I invest in, I can help my company make more money. Are you a private consultant, and how do we steer business to you? We want all the companies to be hiring you to advise them.
Eleanor, I have 4 kids, and I have a job, and I have no time for consulting. So I'm happy to help companies as much as I can to speak and to talk about what I have observed, but working with them closely would require a tremendous amount of time, which I don't have. However, I'm happy to report that there is at least one company whose CEO sent me an email, and he said, you know, after I read your book and before, you know, I realized that the virtuous cycle that you talk about, we do that with our suppliers. So I thought, why don't we do that with our employees? And he said, all the problems that you talk about in the book that are, you know, outcomes of bad jobs, we have those as well. So he told me that he was going to change his whole strategy, and I told him to please send me an update, and I would love to write a case about, you know, how he did it, to be able to give some lessons to others. I mean, I encourage companies to follow the strategy. I'm happy to help as much as I can, but I have very limited time.
Yes, I understand that. I mean, I'm amazed you do anything, given that you have four children. I had one, and it was just a big time commitment. So hats off to you for doing that. And
thank you.
By the way, I just also want to say on that point about that, you know, there's a misconception out there that a company has to actually be born as a good job strategy company, that it has to be the vision of the original founder, has had to have all this thought out, and then that's how they start the company. So now that we, Company X, is out there, you know, we just have to keep going the way we're going. In fact, that's not at all true, and that companies, when they become aware of what they're doing and that they're actually leaving a lot of money on the table by not hiring enough people, not training them, not being efficient in their operation, that they can turn it around, and that many companies have changed. Isn't that true?
It is true that companies can turn around, and the best case that I have for that is of the four companies I've studied, one of them did not start as a good job strategy company. One of them started as offering bad jobs, bad customer service, and not doing so well financially. But when they reached about 100 stores, and when this is a supermarket chain in Spain, and when there was competition from much larger international firms in Spain, they realized we have to change our strategy. We have to offer better value for our customers. And they knew that the way to do that was to make smart operational choices and to really invest in their people. And they turned it around. And now Mercadona is the largest supermarket chain in Spain. And at a time where Spain is not doing so well, Mercadona is thriving.
Yeah, that's great. So I personally would like to see your book in the hands of every CEO in the country. Or, you know, you tell me, where are those juncture points? We've talked about the business school professors and the changing of how the up-and-coming executives are being taught. So that's clearly one arena. Then we have the CEOs of the companies that are out there. Where do you see the leverage points? Like if you had a magic wand and you could say we're going to these three places, where would you go? Who would you talk to make a shift to the good job strategy?
Oh, that's such a hard question to answer. You know, the reason it's hard to answer is if you go to smaller companies, it might be easier to change them. Right before the culture sinks in, changes are easier, so you could prove it much faster. But if you go to much larger companies, the effect will be so much bigger. Mm-hmm. So that's a really hard question. I'm hesitant to answer it without having any data. But if I had a magic wand and voila, we could change a few, I would go after the first big ones. Right? I mean, if you were to change Walmart, you've affected the lives of more than 1.3 million people in the United States.
Right.
So.
Oh, okay, good. Now I'm on a campaign. I'm going to get in touch with the CEO of Walmart. I'm going to send him your book.
But again, they're not the only one. I mean, they're the biggest ones, but they're not the only ones. You know.
Right.
Most other big box retailers operate just the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but if you could get Walmart to shift, it's just such a flagship in the retail arena. On the other hand, if we all just decide to go shopping at Costco instead of Walmart, let's vote with our feet, vote with our dollars, and just have Costco be making more money than Walmart eventually.
Yes, or to Wegmans or to Publix. Or, you know, there might be lots of other local stores that offer low prices and good jobs.
Right. Very good. So we're coming to the end of our show. Before we sign off, I just wanted to ask you if there was any other message you have you'd like to share with our listeners.
You know, you were fabulous, Eleanor, but, you know, I just want to conclude by saying that, you know, offering bad jobs, we keep hearing that bad jobs are necessary for companies to offer low prices, but bad jobs are not necessary. Offering bad jobs is a choice. Even in highly competitive industries like low-cost retail, it's possible to treat employees well, offer them good wages, and make a lot of money at the same time. And so I want the listeners to leave with that message. And, yeah, so I guess that's what I want to say as a last sentence.
Fantastic. And where can listeners learn more about your work? Do you have a website?
I have a website, zeyneptone.com. That's ZeyneptoN.com. The book is called The Good Job Strategy. If they just Google The Good Job Strategy, they would find my website. But on my website, I have, you know, information about my book. I have blog posts related to this topic and other topics as well. And I have references to the academic and managerial articles that I've written. So they can find all the information that they want through my website.
Awesome. Well, Zeynep Ton, thank you so much for being with us today and for all your important work.
Thank you, Eleanor. Thank you for having me.
In case you've missed any of these programs, they're available in the archives. If you want to learn more about other breakthrough solutions, go to thebreakthroughway.com. If you like this program, please go to iTunes and like it there. Our theme song is Let's Give Them Something to Talk About, sung by Bonnie Raitt. Next week, my co-host Charlene Spretnik will be here with her guest. I'll be back 2 weeks from today. Thanks for joining us. This is Eleanor LeCain with All Together Now.